as she took a sip of her water. There'd been times when N had wondered if her Abacus split talent was wrong. She'd never prided herself on her analytical or problem-solving skills. But it didn't make sense. It wasn't N's father who'd been the Abacus, but her mother. And Lourdes had known N's mother, the woman who'd entrusted N to Lourdes' care before she died. So if there was a case of mistaken paternity, she'd have to question her Salter blood talent, not her split talent. But she was a decent dancer. Decent enough for a Salter. She'd always known she was a bastard. She wasn't ashamed about it. But that didn't mean she appreciated what Alice was implying. Lourdes rarely spoke of N's birth mother, so N knew too little about her to have any attachment. But still, the comment felt crass and unkind, even for new reigns. And N's wouldn't take anyone's taunts any longer. "I'd ask," N snapped, "but Mummy's dead." It was a very unladylike thing to say, even if it felt oh so good to do so.
"Oh, so the doll has some bite," Alice sneered. "Fine. Lie or play whatever game you want. But I want you to know how it works here. There are no favorites. There are no cheats. You get your roles on merit alone, but that doesn't mean anyone will take kindly to you if you're trying to play us for fools."
Alice made a show of looking down at the floor.
"You know, missing that net wouldn't be hard, with the right push."
2 days ago, N might have withered in the face of such a threat. But yesterday, she'd poisoned Cedric Torin, one of the most dangerous men in the city. And today, she wasn't in the mood to hear anyone else call her a doll. She wasn't so breakable. She finished her water and handed Alice back the cup.
"Then push me," she growled, her fury growing.
But her anger had far less to do with Alice's words, and everything to do with the doubt that was burying itself in her mind. Lourdes had lied about a lot of things. Anne had braced herself for the truth when she decided to come to New Reigns. But this was different. These lies involved Anne. Lourdes had hidden her politics from her daughter, but Anne hated to imagine that she might have concealed Anne's very identity from her as well. Alice shrugged, but gave a menacing smile.
"Lo, Tommy! We need a catcher! Dollface here is getting cocky!"
Tommy, one of the other acrobats, left his group at the bars and ran to join them. To Anne's surprise, she realized the rest of the troupe had stopped practicing. They'd been watching her. No one had ever watched her before.
"We're going to practice some tricks," Alice told Tommy as he smiled, unaware and well-intentioned. "I think the new girl could use more of a challenge. I want to make sure she knows how it works around here."
Anne gritted her teeth. She hadn't asked for this. She wasn't looking to impress anyone or win anything. But she'd spent her entire life fighting for next to last. So if she had to play, she would not lose. She would not break. She had other business in this city. Levi. Anne was wearing some of the clothes Levi had given her, and whoever the original owners of that fur coat and blue dress might have been, he decided she wore them better.
"New Reigns looks good on you," he said.
She didn't grace him with a smile. She pulled the coat tighter around herself and shivered.
"She's in a mood," Jack warned.
He leaned against the alley wall behind them, his presence quiet, even though he took up so much space. He'd also worn his best, a grey vest and pinstriped shirt. His jacket was draped over his arm, and he smoked a cheap cigar. It smelled foul. Levi hated them. But it was preferable to the other substances these streets had to offer.
"We've been waiting for 10 minutes, she groaned. "Are you sure Muncie is coming?"
"Of course she is."
Levi flashed a smile, though the doubt had occurred to him as well. But Muncie was more dependable than the sunrise. She'd be here.
"It's a fever for her lord,"
Jack grunted.
"Oh, is he in a mood too?" Raymond asked.
He stood on Levi's opposite side, grinding a pebble into the cobblestones with his blue and black striped cane. It looked like something out of a candy shop. The Sauterelle wasn't much to look at, even from the front, and unfortunately they were in the back. The alley was an offshoot of an offshoot off Trop Street, A collection of discarded liquor bottles, random articles of clothing, and food wrappers. Faintly, the ragtime from within the cabaret murmured in the darkness. Levi felt an itch in his fingers, picturing the Sauterelle's numerous card tables. He was in the mood to win tonight.
"You went too far today,"
Jack said low enough that only Levi could hear. Levi tensed, his winning mood already diminishing.
"You tell me this now."
"It wasn't you, Levi. It was an act, and Chez saw through it," Jack said.
"He doesn't want a show. He wants votes. What else was I supposed to do?"
They were already sneaking into the Sauterelle just so they wouldn't have to pay for tickets. Jack shook his head.
"I just have a bad feeling."
Raymond plucked the cigar from Jack's mouth and took a hit.
"You always have a bad feeling. You're more jitter than person."
He handed Jack back the cigar, who looked less than eager to have it returned.
"What's the problem?"
"Nothing,"
Levi said hurriedly, because he already knew Raymond's advice. If there was a threat, squash it. Break the rules before they broke you. Jack inspected the cigar, clearly decided he no longer wanted it, and offered it to N.
"What do I look like?" she asked.
Jack grinned.
"Like a sinner."
She humphed. The back door to the cabaret opened at last, and Muncie poked her head out. Her eyes widened as she took in the sight of Raymond.
Eight fingers,
she said weakly.
"I'm a friend, little missy,"
Raymond said, his voice welcoming. Though Levi knew each of his eight rings contained a different type of poison, memorabilia from his days as a dove.
"We've come to enjoy a good show."
Muncie looked hesitantly to Levi, who nodded, then opened the door. The four of them slipped in. He patted Muncie on the back.
"This is our secret, isn't it, Kit?"
he asked.
"People will stare," she whispered. "People will recognize him."
Muncie was right. Neither Raymond Kitamura's slimy face nor gaudy style was easy to forget. Levi preferred a more inconspicuous approach himself. In fact, he preferred almost any approach Raymond didn't. He figured this was why Raymond had taken such a liking to him.
"He'll behave," Levi promised, as if he had any control over the Scarlord.
Muncie nodded uncertainly and scampered off, back to her post in the kitchens. N lingered in the hallway, clearly waiting for Levi. The music from the show grew louder, the cigarette smoke stronger, the lights brighter. But they paused briefly in the hallway's darkness.
"What if she's in there?"
N asked breathlessly. It was obvious who she was talking about. Levi had considered this, but it seemed unlikely. Lords wouldn't let her daughter worry while she passed her nights at a variety show.
"She probably won't be," he said gently. "But this is the arts neighborhood. A lot of her associates come here."
N nodded, but Levi could tell she didn't feel much better by the way she reached out and grasped his arm. She might have been collecting herself, but the touch was enough to make Levi unravel. Her eyes were wide as she stared at the lights ahead, her breath hitched. Just the look of her like that made his chest knot. She was dangerous, this missy. Barely 2 days of knowing her, and Levi was so fixedly intertwined with her troubles. He'd been Vianca's prisoner for 4 years, and never had anyone else shared his cell. Never had anyone else understood. He let her compose herself, even though his own heart was pounding. It was nice to feel needed, nice to provide. For the past several months, he had only taken, never given. And he couldn't give her much, except some measure of comfort.
"We're going to find her," he promised.
She nodded again. He wasn't sure she was even listening, so he squeezed her shoulder. She shied away, wincing.
"Did I do something wrong?" Levi asked.
"Sorry, I'm just terribly sore,"
she said, rubbing her arm. Levi grinned.
"Already had your first rehearsal. Well, you seem to be in one piece. Are you that terrible?"
She hesitated, then gave him a weak smile.
"I soothed myself by imagining telling you off later."
"Is that so?"
he asked, stepping even closer to goad her. He probably deserved to be told off.
He'd definitely pulled the acrobatics idea out of his arse.
Well, I'm ready. Let me have it.
Then the music stopped, and they heard the audience clapping. N's attention turned back to the show, and Levi found himself a bit disappointed. Let's go find the others. They emerged on a second-floor balcony, the show itself below them. Jack and Raymond perched at a high top near the railing, drinks already in their hands. They hollered at N as she approached, real rowdy, though Levi couldn't figure out why, until he saw the stage, where a woman posed in nothing but a slinky garter set and silver tassels dangling from her nipples. N went red as a cherry, and her lips formed a small O.
I see why your mother likes it here, Levi said.
Levi could tell from N's expression that she was attempting to remain nonchalant about it all. But he still recalled their delightful experience yesterday passing Sweetie Street. She hadn't given up her sensitivities that quickly.
Yes, well,
N breathed, examining the mostly nude woman.
I imagine Lords probably does.
Levi drummed his fingers against the countertop, then searched the floor below for a card table to make his own. He nudged Jack and pointed to the far corner.
That one, he declared. Why that one? Asked Jack. Just a feeling.
Truthfully, the card dealer at the table, who wasn't an iron, wasn't anyone Levi recognized, was devastatingly attractive. They were here to find Lords, and this was an opportunity for Levi to win some of the voltage he needed to pay back Cedric. But there was no harm in a little fun.
Are we splitting up then?
Anne asked, scanning the crowd below. Lords and her head of blonde hair were nowhere to be found.
Of course not, Raymond said. They are, but you can't be wandering around a place like this all alone.
He put his arm around Anne's shoulders, but, just as she'd done to Levi earlier, she groaned and battered him off, muttering about trapezes and bruises and handsprings. Levi shot Raymond a questioning glance. Levi didn't have the right to feel possessive. In fact, he would much prefer that he didn't feel this way, would much prefer the idea of the handsome card dealer whose problems were so distant from his own. But he couldn't imagine what interest Raymond might possibly take in N. While Levi leaned either way, N was most assuredly not Raymond's type.
You need a local with you, missy, Raymond told her. Levi will be asking around at the card tables. Jack will be keeping an eye on the floor, and you and I can chat with the staff, who I'm sure see more here than anyone.
Levi couldn't argue with his logic, though it irked him how easily Raymond had taken the lead, even if Raymond was the one who'd suggested they survey the Sauterelle in the first place. Whereas Levi had always needed to work for his authority as a leader, being a lord came naturally to Raymond.
Fine, Anne said.
It also irritated him how quickly she'd agreed.
Well, fine then, Levi muttered,
then made for the stairwell. Following the striptease act was a duo juggling knives. They weren't ordinary daggers. They were hooked in a way that faintly resembled scythes. Levi studied the two girls tossing them, searching for the trick. They spun between throws, danced with blades between each of their fingers, played with the steel as though it were ribbon. It must have been a hoax. But then he noticed the white hair of one of the performers. She was a dove, a member of the most feared gang in the city, the Assassins. It was no trick then. He was surprised the Sauterelle let her perform, lest she frighten the audience. Or was the hair part of the show too? Levi slid into an empty seat at his selected table and put down a few volts. He was directly beside the handsome card dealer, who was very much the sort Levi liked in men. Delicate lips, rosy skin, all soft and boyish.
I haven't played here in ages, Levi said casually. You don't look familiar, the dealer replied.
Levi gave him a moment, wondering if he'd recognize him after all. Half the other dealers here were irons, and besides, Levi was famous to anyone who enjoyed trops. But when the handsome boy remained silent, Levi regretfully continued, his ego wounded.
I only come here on occasion. I like the art scene. Pretty different from the university.
The dealer nodded, showing he'd heard, though he had to pause to finish out the hand.
Levi folded the first round, as he always did. It gave the impression he wasn't an aggressive player, gave the others a false sense of ease.
South side, eh? I wouldn't have guessed. It doesn't suit me, Levi shrugged. But I'm good with business.
The hand ended, and to his luck, Levi was dealt an excellent new one, not that he needed one to win. But he preferred not to resort to cheating, unless he thought he might leave the den with his pockets lighter than when he'd entered. 15 minutes later, Levi had won the pot. He slid the small pile of chips toward himself with satisfaction.
You play a lot? The dealer asked. On occasion.
Levi glanced over his shoulder.
It's the crowds I like. No other place like this. All sorts come here. I don't really pay much attention, he said blandly.
Levi realized he wasn't likely to find either much information or fun with the dealer, so he decided to try for a different form of entertainment. He ordered himself his favorite drink, a gambler's ruin, and planned to bet his entire pile on the next hand, even if his cards were mediocre. He liked playing it cocky, especially when the stakes got high. He needed to dig himself out of the rut from last night and lift his spirits. By the time he had his drink in hand and a new music act had taken the stage, Levi was in an excellent mood. He plucked the cherry out of the bourbon and twisted the stem between his teeth as he played, trying to tie it in a knot. It was easier to focus on this than maintaining his poker face, especially when he felt so certain he would win. Besides the handsome but disappointing dealer and himself, there were two other players at the table. A woman who was as large as two jacks put together, and a boy who was making a point to match Levi's every bet. Levi held two of-a-kinds. Certainly the boy could have held something better, but it wouldn't matter. Not if he broke first. The dealer passed out a new card. It did nothing to help Levi's hand. But still he bet. The woman folded. The boy kept going. Levi sat up straighter, took another sip, added another chip. Trops was a waiting game, one of the few where the bluff was worth more than the cards themselves. The players began with 3 cards, but if they played out the whole hand, ended with 12. That rarely happened, though. Players folded, players broke. Especially after the first play, 7 cards in, when the players were required to turn over at least 3 cards. Levi turned over his cards first, revealing the lower of his 2 pairs. The boy's cards were random, mismatched of suit and number. Worthless. Yet still he bet. Levi spit the knotted cherry stem into his glass. The night was getting interesting. But in the end, the boy broke, as Levi knew he would. Levi pressed him up until the 11th card. Then, finally, he folded. They each showed their cards. The boy had 4 sixes, all hiding in his hand, while Levi had finished with a full house. Levi would have lost, had they reached the last trick. It was his favorite way to win, knowing he'd been within an inch of losing. The boy, to his credit, didn't look irritated. He nodded at Levi with approval. They played 10 more hands. It took Levi only a few to pick out the boy's tell. Whenever he was bluffing, his eyes drifted more often to the stage, searching for a distraction to hide his expression. He wasn't as handsome as the dealer, but he had an interesting face. His skin was several shades darker than Levi's, his hair black, straight and tied at the nape of his neck. He had a small tattoo of a pair of dice beneath his jaw, and he wore a smoking jacket with a gold tie. Levi's buzz was growing, his mood lightening, his pocket 400 volts heavier. He was quickly forgetting why they'd come to the Sauterelle. Then he spotted N speaking with someone in the corner by the stage, her fur coat swallowing her small frame. He couldn't see who was talking to her. The back was facing Levi. But it definitely wasn't Raymond. As he craned his neck to get a better look, Dice slid into the seat beside him. "She's pretty," he commented matter-of-factly. It took Levi a moment to realize he was referring to the woman singing on the stage, not to N. Levi shrugged. Dice picked up Levi's glass and shook it. The ice cubes rattled.
"You need another drink."
He didn't wait for Levi's response before walking over to the bar. Levi waited for his internal logic to remind him that mysterious boys met in cabarets were a terrible idea, and that he was here for an entirely different purpose tonight. But his logic remained quiet, subdued by the whiskey. He pocketed his chips and followed the young man to the bar. "Do you often gamble where the other irons work?" Dice asked Levi as he sat in the barstool beside him.
"Not usually, no," Levi replied.
He unrolled the cuffs of his shirt sleeves to conceal his tattoos, though he was secretly pleased he'd finally been recognized, even if it was in the den of one of his own clients.
"It's your hair," Dice said. "Orb maker hair. Gives you away."
Levi smiled and shrugged ruefully. He'd often considered dyeing it. It wasn't as if he used his orb maker talent, but he couldn't picture himself without it. The bartender handed Levi his new drink. Levi immediately went for the cherry.
"I didn't expect to win," Dice said.
He'd ordered the snake eyes for himself. It was a drink you ordered if you was stuck in a losing streak. A drink meant to bring luck.
"I'd heard you were good, but I don't usually believe what they say about people like you." "People like me?"
"The players. They say the city's a game. One only the reckless play."
Levi preferred to think of himself as ambitious rather than reckless.
"Who are these, they?"
Levi asked, thinking of N's ridiculous guidebook.
"The spectators."
Dice scooted closer to Levi, awfully close, and kept his voice low.
"So, why are you really here then, if not to gamble or to watch?"
The alcohol warmed him from inside out. It made everything louder and quieter at the same time. The music, the taste of the bourbon and coffee liqueur, the smell of cigarettes, the touch of Dice's hand against his. Louder. The lights, the burn of the liquor, Cedric's voice in his mind as he delivered the shadow card, Levi's own caution. Quieter.
"I'm looking for someone," he said.
Up close, Dice smelled like honey and designer cologne.
"A woman?" Dice asked.
"Sometimes, but not always," he answered. "She goes by she. Here, they'd probably call her Seance."
Dice nodded, tracing his thumb against Levi's wrist in a way that made everything else fade into the background.
"Another player," Dice mused. "Why are you looking for her?"
"9 days, whispered Cedric's voice. "Do you know her?"
Levi asked, his voice high and hopeful. He twisted the cherry stem between his teeth. Dice moved his hand away so he could take a sip of his drink.
"What do you think about when you're trying to bluff?" he murmured, deftly changing the subject.
"What do you mean?"
Levi asked, playing along.
"When you have the winning hand, and you know it, how do you keep your face so still?"
He tapped Levi's forehead, just above his brow bone. His finger lingered a moment too long.
"And don't say nothing."
Levi hadn't been going to.
"I think about the beach."
"Not many nice beaches in New Orleans, but I hear that boardwalk they're building will be something else."
Levi took another sip as his memories washed over him. They were too loud, enhanced by the whiskey.
"There was a beach near where I grew up. I think of the sound of the gulls, the feeling of the wind on my neck, the smell of the salt."
It was a trick he'd learned, living in that house. How to be somewhere else. How to be anywhere else.
"I just kept thinking, looking at you, that you had a winning hand. You play like you've already won."
"That's the only real way to play."
"Until you need to show your cards."
The ragtime grew louder behind them. Dice's honey smell, louder. Levi's heartbeat, louder.
"Do you know the person I was talking about?"
Dice inched closer, though there wasn't much space left between them.
"Don't fold so soon."
Levi could feel the words against his skin as easily as he heard them.
"You know, spectators wouldn't get tattoos of Dice," Levi murmured.
He brushed his fingers against it on Dice's jawline, tracing the ink.
Dice leaned his head back and exposed his neck to Levi's touch.
After several moments,
Levi pulled away so he could reach for a napkin and a pen.
Write it down for me.
You're not that drunk. You'll remember.
It's important.
Dice conceded and took the napkin. While he wrote, Levi tugged the boy closer by his tie and pressed his lips against the tattoo. Dice let out a low groan that made Levi smile. He was winning a lot tonight. He trailed higher, brushing Dice's hair aside and kissed below his ear. Dice's skin grew hotter, and he took his time finishing the note. Levi spared a glance at the napkin before slipping it into his pocket. It was an address.
I can't make any promises,
Dice breathed against Levi's neck.
It's just what I've heard.
You hear a lot of things.
He smiled. It's how I play the game. And then he kissed Levi, and everything felt very loud all at once. It was the kind of kiss Levi had come to expect at places like these, with charming girls or mysterious boys in the hours after midnight. The kind of kiss that was meant for that place, that time, and never again. The kind of kiss you wanted the other person to remember, even if you would forget. He'd remember this one, he decided, as Di slid the cherry stem out from Levi's lips and knotted it between his teeth. Several acts in the variety show later, Levi staggered back to the table where Jack waited, his face flushed, the gold tie wrapped around his neck. They always let him keep something. N. Although she'd never admit it to the boys, N was rather enjoying the cabaret. Everything about New Rains felt unfamiliar, and the Sauterelle did too. The burlesque fashions bore little resemblance to the chiffon and white lace in Bellamy. The dancing wasn't the sort she'd learned in school. The liquors weren't even allowed in her town. But it was also intriguing, exciting. For the first time since she'd left home, she was content to be out of her comfort zone, eager to explore the unknown.
"What will you have?"
the Scar Lord asked over the music as he led her to the bar. "I'm not sure I need a drink," she said, remembering how little she'd cared for the wine last night.
"You look more approachable with something in your hand," Raymond assured her.
She still couldn't understand why Raymond had so quickly volunteered to guide her, but she found herself grateful for his presence and the power he wielded. She saw the way the people here looked at him, like seeing him was a story they would tell their friends later that night. Like they would do whatever he asked. If they were going to find information on Lords, that power was something she needed. "Water will work," she countered.
"Has no one told you not to drink the water in New Rains?"
N thought back to the water she'd guzzled at rehearsal. It hadn't tasted bad. "Is it contaminated?"
"Not polluted, just corrupted."
He winked at her and laughed. N suspected he was the sort who always laughed at his own jokes.
"Better be careful, missy. Souls can go black in this city."
The bartender, who also didn't seem to be amused by Raymond's humor, looked towards N impatiently.
"She'll have a snake eyes," Raymond said for her. "It's a signature cocktail around here. Can't say you've been here till you've tried it."
N doubted she'd enjoy anything popular in New Rains.
"What's the drink of choice in Bellamy?"
"Lemonade," she said dryly. Raymond shook his head.
"I'll have a gambler's ruin," he said.
When the bartender left to prepare their drinks, Raymond lowered himself so he spoke directly in her ear.
"We'll ask the staff questions first, then the performers."
"Are you sure they'd remember her?" Anne asked, surveying the crowd. Lord's simple style and quiet manner wouldn't have stood out here among the outrageous clothes and layers of harsh makeup.
"It's not remembering her that we have to worry about," he said darkly. "It's them lying."
N didn't have time to ponder that as their drinks had arrived. Hers was fizzy and pale gold. Before the bartender could turn to the next customer, she asked, "Have you ever met someone here named Lord Zalfero? She goes by the name Seance." When the bartender shook his head, N persisted.
She's tall, blonde, 30s. She usually wears trousers and...
I don't know who you're talking about, he grunted, then walked away.
Well, that was rude, En muttered. She angrily took a sip of her cocktail. It wasn't sweet enough, but it was certainly more palatable than the wine.
He was telling the truth, Raymond said matter-of-factly.
You seem awfully sure.
I can see when someone is lying, he explained. Not from a tell, or whatever Levi calls it. It's my blood talent.
He inspected his walking stick, as though avoiding her gaze, but En strangely felt as though she could still feel his eyes on her.
Not that anyone is thick enough to try to hide anything from me.
His tone sounded accusatory, but she couldn't imagine why. She took another generous sip of her drink and cleared her throat. He couldn't know anything about the vault she'd promised Levi. You're the local, as you said. Who should we talk to next? The two of them gradually made their way around the cabaret, speaking to members of the waitstaff and the bouncers. En did most of the talking. Each time Raymond presented En as Miss Salter, but provided no introduction for himself. He simply stood beside her and looked threatening. They didn't find many answers. The closest they came was someone who remembered Lourdes, but had never spoken to her, nor seen her with anyone else. It was terribly disheartening. Each time someone nodded with recognition, En felt a thread of hope tighten her chest. But each time that thread snapped with disappointment. She was likely closer to finding her mother than she'd ever been. But there were no real leads. The trail could very easily end here. Soon her drink was finished, and a replacement quickly found its way into her hand. The liquor eased the pain of her disappointment, as well as the aches of her horrendously sore muscles from rehearsal. I'm not giving up, En announced, her face oddly feverish.
We'll have to find a way to talk to the performers, Raymond started to say, but stopped,
as En was already marching toward the backstage area. She entered a room full of costumes, makeup and smoke, the Scarlord following close behind. It smells like... En sniffed the air. Like raspberry cordial. She carelessly ran her hands along the beaded and sequined dresses in the costume rack, watching them shimmer.
It's called Mistress, Raymond explained, crinkling his nose and swatting away the smoke. It's popular right now. An aphrodisiac. Torin-owned, I think.
He pointed to the blunt stubs in the ashtray. The ash left behind a golden residue. Are you supposed to be back here? A feminine voice asked. En whirled around, nearly losing her balance. The speaker was a woman with a wary expression, wearing a feathered hat, a scarlet slip, and very little else. I'm a dancer, En offered brightly, as a means of explanation. Raymond shook his head, and the woman's eyes narrowed uneasily as she took him in. You look familiar, she said. Raymond smiled.
I have one of those faces.
Mm-hmm, she murmured uncertainly. Behind her, two other performers, carrying a collection of knives, emerged from the dressing room. Raymond patted En on the shoulder, making her wince again, and said,
I'll go talk to them. Don't leave this room.
I can take care of myself.
Sure, Missy. Just don't leave.
Then he skulked after the other performers, leaving En alone with the woman. The performer sat on the chair by the vanity. What are you drinking? En looked down at her glass and was surprised to find it empty once more. It was gold. She raised her eyebrows. Don't start too young, sweetie. That's how they trap you. And you're tiny as a teaspoon. She motioned for En to sit beside her, and En collapsed in a very unladylike fashion. When she leaned back, the room spun around her like a carousel, so En shook her head and kept herself upright. The woman plucked the empty glass out of her hand. I'm the vedette here, the lead performer. My name's Demi Salter. En giggled. She couldn't imagine herself wearing an outfit like Demi's when she danced. En Salter. Ah, well, a cousin wouldn't tell on me for a little pre-show ritual. Demi winked, pulled a joint out of her pocket and lit it.
The smoke was the color of marigolds. Demi coughed for a moment, then relaxed into her chair.
"I like your jacket," she said.
"Thank you," Anne answered. She liked it too, though she felt guilty imagining some girl in the city who was without her fur coat. But it was also very pretty.
"I'm looking for my mother,"
Anne said, or rather blurted. She liked Demi, and she'd always enjoyed the atmosphere backstage. But she was here with a purpose.
"Well, she's not back here," Demi smirked. "I don't know where she is," Anne admitted. "She's been missing. Her name is Lourdes, and Seance, and she..."
"Maybe you're not looking in the right places," Demi said, letting out a drag. "Where else do you think she could be?"
"Dead," a voice whispered in N's head, and she whimpered. The voice wasn't usually so loud. She could use a glass of water, or better yet, a bed.
"Don't do that! Don't do that!" Demi ordered wildly. "It's bad luck to cry backstage!"
N shook her head.
"I'm not going to cry."
It was as much a command to herself as it was a reassurance for Demi. Just as she'd felt so often since yesterday morning, she was right on the edge of tears, a touch away from shattering. But she was growing accustomed to the feeling. Even after two drinks, she wouldn't cry. Outside, in the cabaret, the music changed to something faster. Demi swore.
"I only have a few more minutes. I have a routine, you know. It's not easy going out there if I have all my wits about me."
"I'm sorry," Anne murmured with a small sniffle.
"Oh, you're so depressing. People come here to have fun, sweetie."
Anne frowned. She could be fun if she wanted to. Demi stood up, set down her joint, and quaffed herself in the mirror. She handed Anne a tube of red lipstick.
"This will look good on you. Has anyone ever told you that you look like a doll?"
Anne grimaced. "A few times." With a tremendous amount of pleasure, she pictured Cedric Torin overturning his breakfast, lunch, and dinner across the city. Anne applied a layer of the lipstick and eyed herself in the mirror, wondering once again if the city of sin was turning her into a bad person. She dismissed the thought and helped herself to the other makeup Demi had on the vanity. Makeup was always soothing, and besides, she knew Cedric deserved everything he was getting.
"What do you usually do to prep for a show?"
Demi asked, patting down her false eyelashes.
"I repeat my mother's rules to myself, over and over."
She had never admitted that to anyone. Not that it was shameful, it just made her sound vulnerable. She wasn't quite sure why she'd done it. Demi was a stranger, but maybe that was precisely why.
"Her rules?"
"She has these rules about how to behave. About things like getting lost or showing emotion or..."
"You mean street rules,"
Demi said. She handed Anne her powder compact, apparently happy to share her products.
"Like what the gangs say."
Anne stared at Demi for a moment, almost uncertain she'd heard correctly. Lord's rules were precious to her, and she didn't like to imagine they belonged to anyone else, let alone that they had begun somewhere else. And the more she remembered Lourdes repeating those phrases to her, claiming they were about etiquette, the more cheated she began to feel. Instead of getting upset, Anne pressed some powder on her forehead, and mentally filed that thought away as a question she would ask Levi later. She should find Levi now. She was wasting time playing with Demi's makeup. But Raymond had told her to stay here, and somehow she knew, deep down, that there were no answers waiting for her out there in the Sauterelle. Only more strangers and more disappointment.
"Every time I perform, I smoke a little of this," Demi explained. "But that's a terrible idea. Don't start it. It's already stained my teeth yellow."
She tapped its excess ash into the tray, and Anne tried not to crinkle her nose. It didn't smell as good up close.
"Before they got me into this, I was a little more self-sufficient. I could get that natural flush all on my own."
She held up two fingers and winked at Anne, who blushed.
"Pleasure isn't just for the boys, you know. You don't even need lovers at all if you get good enough at it."
Anne, in fact, had not known. and turned over Demi's words curiously. Outside, the audience clapped, and Demi straightened, took a last hit of Mistress, and headed toward the stage. En stared around the empty dressing room. She supposed she would need to find Raymond, rather than wait for him to find her. But she was tired of searching, and the room wouldn't stop tilting.
"Well, come on," Demi urged. "You won't find your mother while moping drunk in here."
"I'm not moping," En grumbled, following Demi without thinking. They walked onto the darkened stage. The audience whispered and whistled, waiting for the next act to begin. Demi placed one hand on En's shoulder and peered through the crowd.
"There," she said, pointing at a young man near the front. "Go talk to him. He'll know your rules."
As the lights turned on and the music began to play, En scampered off the stage. She considered ignoring Demi's suggestion. En was exhausted and doubted it would lead anywhere. But she hadn't traveled all this way to quit just because she was tired and admittedly a little drunk. The young man sat by himself, twirling his finger over a glass of red wine. His hair was corkscrew curly, peeking out from underneath his top hat. He put on a salesperson's smile as En approached.
"What can I do for you?" he asked.
"I'm looking for someone," she answered, her words slightly slurred. "Her name is Seance."
"The writer?"
En perked up and slid into the chair next to him. Maybe he would turn out to be a promising source after all.
"Have you seen her?"
"I don't go looking for trouble, missy," he said. "You don't look like you do either."
"I was told writers like her come here."
"They did, when they were alive."
He looked at her pointedly, and En again felt herself standing at the edge of that cliff. She was tired of feeling this way, angry for feeling this way. She could no longer tell if she needed to sob or to scream.
"Maybe there's something else I can do for you," he offered. "You need a job?"
"I've got a job. What I need is information."
"Ah, but the Orphan Guild can always get you a better job."
The Orphan Guild? The name sounded familiar. Maybe something she'd read in her guidebook. Likely something to avoid. She looked around the room for an excuse, for an exit.
"Not from the city. Most people would know the Orphan Guild. It's the name of opportunity."
"I'm not an orphan," she said defiantly. "Not an orphan. Not a doll. Not a lost cause."
"What are your talents?" he asked.
Something about his voice reminded En of Mistress, sweet as syrup. The way he leaned forward, the glimmer in his eyes, it was all very alluring. He did have something to offer, she felt instinctively. He was trustworthy. Speaking with him was a good decision. She leaned closer, an invisible force drawing her to his voice. She wasn't sure if it was the alcohol or something else.
"I'm a dancer," she offered to him. "And a split counter."
"The Scar Hands could always use counters. We have a lot of them in the guild," he said thoughtfully. "A shame to scar those pretty hands, though."
He reached out and touched En's cheek, then turned her head side to side, inspecting her. At first, En let him. He was trustworthy. He was no threat.
"I'm a bad counter,"
she admitted, because she felt like she needed to be honest with him. "And..." She searched for the words, and it was growing more difficult to find them. More difficult to remember why she'd denied the young man earlier.
"I don't want a job."
She tried to peel her eyes off him and his sleazy smile to find the others. Levi, Jack, Raymond. She squinted around the cabaret, but it was hard to picture their faces. Whenever she tried, she saw the young man's. He clicked his tongue and turned her head back toward him. Her shoulders relaxed.
"Split counters aren't bad counters, missy. Maybe that's not really your talent."
He leaned forward and lowered his voice.
"We have blood gazers. They're complimentary."
"Blood gazers?" En repeated, confused.
"They can see your talents, Lots of people are mistaken about them, you know.
His words struck a nerve, and Anne shook her head, the hold of the trance fading. She squeezed the edge of the table, her thoughts veering in several directions. Talents. His voice. Mistaken. A secret.
Maybe Mummy didn't really know the Daddy after all, she heard Alice's sneer. But her comment had been just a competitor being cruel. It shouldn't have shaken Anne like it had.
Were you that terrible? Levi had asked about her rehearsal.
The truth was quite the opposite. She'd been a natural. She still remembered the look on Alice's face when she'd perfected the simple routine in a matter of hours. How the entire troupe had noticed her, applauded her, and the rush that had sped through her chest. She should have told Levi instead of making it a secret. But it felt like a secret. Like something wrong. Something wrong with her. The more the thought shook her, the more she listened to the other voices, the less she remained under the young man's spell. She pushed her seat away from him. "Stop it," she told him.
"Stop what?"
She willed herself to get up, but her body felt heavier than usual, and not from the alcohol.
"Let me go."
"I'm just doing you a favor," the young man said, licking his lips. "I could give you a name of a gazer. It never hurts to know."
"I don't want to know," she snapped.
She dug her fingernails into her thighs.
"Don't be thick, missy. It's free of charge."
Anne tried to gather up the strength to move, but she couldn't lift herself from her seat. His voice felt like an anchor dragging her below the surface. "It's a favor," she heard. "He's trustworthy, kind, helpful." The young man started writing down a name and an address on the back of a business card.
"She's dependable," he said. "And she owes me a favor."
Anne knew she shouldn't reach for it. She tried not to. But her arm lifted, not like a puppet, but more as if drawn to a magnet. Her fingers trembled. Someone shouted behind her, and in a blur, ran and snatched the card out of the young man's hand. Raymond grabbed Anne by the arm and hoisted her up. Seething.
"Are you even allowed in here?"
he spat at the young man. His voice sounded like the strings of a violin snapping. Anne jolted from her chair, alert, awake, and backed away from both of them. The man frowned.
"Eight fingers? You know her?" "He's a chainer, missy," Raymond snarled,
and Anne's blood chilled as she remembered the man she'd seen on Chain Street. A debtor. A street slave. Another few minutes under his spell, and she could have been just like him.
"Favors," Raymond growled, brandishing the business card. "Don't count if you steal them."
His breath reeked of liquor.
"I'm not like them," the boy said. "Can't change what you are. You're a poacher." "I'm a salesman. Does Levi know you're here? I'm not afraid of pup," he challenged. "Besides, Sundays are my nights off."
He grinned wickedly.
"I figured you might remember."
Raymond went scarlet.
"Muck off, Harvey."
He yanked Anne away from the table, back toward the bar.
"I leave you alone for 15 minutes, missy, and you manage to find the seediest person here."
He shook his head.
"Don't tell Levi about this. He'll blame me, and he hates the guilt. He and Mardlin are real holier-than-thou about it."
Raymond took the card out of his pocket.
"What did Harvey give you?"
"It's nothing," she muttered.
"I can hear lies, missy," he hissed.
"It is nothing. I didn't want to take it."
Raymond squeezed her arm tighter, so tight it hurt.
"Why is it that half the time you speak, I can hear the lies on your lips?"
Ben's ears heated in a sort of shame. She hadn't realized she'd been lying to him, and to herself. She did want to know after all. She'd broken plenty of Lord's rules since leaving home, but doubting her mother felt like the worst sort of betrayal. Raymond leaned down lower.
"I don't care if you hide something from me, but I know you're hiding something from Levi. Why is he helping you?"
"Because I'm paying him to," she said,
her voice rising. She snatched the card out of his hand and thrust it in her pocket.
"You're lying again.
She froze. She intended to pay Levi once they found Lords. N didn't have access to the bank account or the vault on her own. But if Raymond told Levi, then N would be without help. Levi had promised they were in this together, and she thought she believed him, but it was hard to be sure. Vaults were more of a guarantee than good intentions.
"Levi's in trouble," Raymond said. "He won't tell me exactly what it is, but I have my suspicions. And if I find out you're leading him into more, or if anything happens to him, then I will find you."
He didn't need to add on another threat. N understood him perfectly well.
"Levi isn't like us. He's better than us."
"Us," he said. But he and Levi were both criminals. N was better than both of them. "I'm not like you," she snapped.
"Lords was. I recognize a familiar face when I see one."
He let her go, and N rubbed her arm where he'd squeezed, where her muscles ached.
"They're over there."
He nodded at a table in the corner, where Jack and Levi were laughing over several empty glasses. Raymond left her to join them, and N wandered over slowly, slightly shell-shocked, still slightly drunk. Levi locked eyes with her, and he smiled. It made her stomach knot. She needed to sober up.
"I like the lipstick," he said.
"Did you find anything?" she asked, ignoring Raymond's suspicious stare as she slid into the seat beside Levi. Levi held up a napkin.
"I won this."
"Impressive."
"No. There's an address on it. We'll go tomorrow."
N relaxed. They wouldn't leave empty-handed. She wasn't empty-handed, though. She still had the business card in her pocket. It was a terrible idea, but she did want to know the truth about herself. Of course she'd rather hear it from her mother, and the address Levi had could lead them straight to Lord's, which meant N didn't need a bloodgazer. Not yet.
"I didn't find anything," Jack said sheepishly.
"I met another Salter," N told them. "She's dancing now." Demi was still on stage, somehow wearing even less than she had before. The raunchy music and raunchier moves made N flush. Still, she had to admire Demi's technique. She was very graceful.
"Maybe Levi could have gotten you a job here."
Jack slapped Levi on the back. Levi looked away hurriedly and took a sip from his already empty glass. Jack turned to her.
"Too much for your sensibilities, missy."
"I'm not a prude," she countered, even if the suggestion made her cheeks flush furiously. Jack snorted.
"Could have fooled me."
She pointed at Levi's tie. "You weren't wearing that earlier."
"I like it," he said.
Raymond rolled his eyes.
"I shouldn't leave any of you alone in cabarets." "Go easy on us," Levi said,
slipping his arm around N's shoulders, forgetting that she was sore. She cringed, but this time didn't feel like pushing him away. Drunk N didn't so much mind that smirk of a smile. She resisted the urge to lean into him and scolded herself. Maybe Levi was the only person she knew in New Reigns, but that didn't mean they were familiar.
"Besides,"
he said, unaware of N shifting with sudden embarrassment under his arm.
"We got what we came for."
Demi's act ended with her brandishing sparklers in both her hands, her leg propped against a bar stool, her slip scandalously riding up. The audience, their table included, cheered, and the four of them decided that was their cue to leave. But N hadn't gotten what she'd come for. As they made their way up the stairs, she scanned the faces in the crowd one last time. Lords was nowhere to be found. Day 3. All stories about the city are true. The City of Sin, a guidebook. Where to go and where not to. Levi. Levi was still nursing a slight headache the evening after their night in the Sauterelle. The vomiting had stopped sometime that morning, right before making himself a walk of shame, the city's supposed hangover cure. A dull ache above his brow bone lingered throughout the day, while he leaned against the shower wall, letting the hot water trail down his shoulders and back, trying to remember exactly how he'd made it back to his room last night. While he collected his paycheck, 200 volts, from Bianca's secretary. While he sat on his couch, painting, wondering when Bianca would return from her hopeless campaigning so she could pay him out of his desperate situation. 8 more days. He now had 2,300 volts toward his 10,000. The only others he could count on were the 500 volts from the Irons collections this week. Everything else he'd have to earn at the gambling table, or beg out of Bianca, or help N find Lords and claim his payout. He was pondering the address Dice had given him the night before when he heard a knock on the door. Levi shoved the napkin in his pocket and rose to answer it. N waited in the hallway. She was dressed in her regular clothes, but her face was flushed, likely from rehearsal, Levi realized. He narrowed his eyes. She'd been nearly as drunk as him last night, but looking at her now, you'd never know it.
"Where's your hangover?" he asked as she marched past him. "That's so natural."
"I drank water when I got home, like my guidebook suggested." She inspected him, her lips pursed. "You look terrible."
"Exactly what kind of guidebook is that, anyway?"
She pulled it out from her purse and examined the back cover. "I don't know. My boss and Bellamy."
"Why do you have it with you now?"
"It has a map."
"I know where we're going."
She tapped him on the forehead with the book. He winced from his headache and swatted her away. "You couldn't tell which way was up or down last night." He grabbed his jacket and hat, feeling sour.
"We'll get mugged walking around with a map. That tourist nonsense is an affront to everything I stand for."
"What do you stand for? Bravado?"
"Obviously."
They stepped into the hallway, and while Levi paused to lock the door behind them, an older man walked past. He wasn't a hotel guest. They didn't stay in this wing. The only people who lived up here were Bianca's associates, and Levi recognized this man. He belonged to one of Bianca's apothecary families, the ones who brewed the drugs she distributed in the city. They were treated like royalty, both in St. Maurice and throughout New Rains. The man even walked like a king, his head high, his Gersten designer suit freshly pressed, his presence impressively regal. Apothecaries disgusted Levi, who couldn't help but remember Jack during his bad days. N started walking behind the man toward the elevator, but Levi held her back.
"We don't ride with him," he said in a low voice. "St. Maurice policy."
"Is he Bianca's husband?"
Levi snorted.
"Bianca's husband has been dead for over a decade. That's just one of her friends."
"How can the Augustines be a crime family if there's just Bianca?"
"There used to be more. Now there's just Bianca and her son, Harrison. I heard he despises her and lives somewhere across the world."
Levi shrugged.
"I figure he's the only sane one in the tree."
After the apothecary disappeared into the elevator, Levi and N made their way down the hallway. They waited several extra moments before ringing the bell. Levi took a deep breath and stared at the emerald green wallpaper. The color always reminded him unpleasantly of Bianca's aura. Wherever he went within St. Maurice, within the place he lived, he felt locked within her cage. She was everywhere he looked. Every night he wore her suit, played her games, did her dirty work. He slept in a grand suite on the top floor, reserved for her closest friends and associates, on silk sheets in a royal-sized bed. But he was not her prince, not her friend. He was her dog. And every night he spent trapped in her empire, he dreamed of building empires of his own. He took a deep breath and tried to turn his thoughts around, tried to convince himself that Lords Alfero would be waiting for them, alive and well, wherever this address was. He wanted that so badly he could feel it like an ache inside his chest. He needed it to be true. 8 more days. His desperation unsettled him. He wasn't the sort of person to seek out addresses drunkenly written on napkins, to abandon all of his logic when faced with a difficult situation. to watch helplessly as his gang crumbled,
to be caught within the clutches of a delusional old woman.
The ache he felt wasn't just from the desperation to survive, but for his second chance, to be the man he was supposed to be. The elevator opened for them, and they stepped inside.